Welcome to the Inside College Soccer Podcast, bringing together some of the best college soccer-related people to your earbuds, from coaches to players and beyond. So, thank you for tuning in. The Inside College Soccer Podcast is brought to you by Sports Recruiting USA, the college soccer experts. Now, enjoy the show.
Well, hey, everybody. This is going to be a fun one. Dan, how are you?
I'm good.
Canada right now, right?
Mr. Canada, yeah. Yeah, Mr. Canada. How's it going, Don? Nice to see you.
Good. And for our listeners, though, you don't sound Canadian to me.
Well, if you ask my friends back home, they'll say I'm picking up the Canadian accent now. But yeah, I grew up in England, so there's a little bit of that accent.
Isn't that funny how that works? When my son came back from he was in Bath for a couple of years. He was with some guys from Wales and Newcastle and London, and he came back with this weird old mixed up accent. And it's like, yeah, how does that happen? It just happens naturally, doesn't it?
It happens. I picked up the Americanisms when I was there, and now I'm getting the Canadian twang too. So it happens.
I can't pick up on the Canadian yet. Actually, I haven't spotted that.
Yet.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny. Settle into the accent of who you're talking to. So I feel like when I'm speaking to English people, I go a little more English. When I'm speaking to American people, I go a bit more American. And then if you heard me speaking to the Canadians, you'd probably pick that up too.
What are you talking about?
So if anybody hears any what's up, A?
What's up, A? How's it going, A?
There we go.
There we go.
All right. So I thought it'd be fun to have you and Chris both on. So Chris was your consultant when you were starting out. What made you even think about coming to the U.S. and playing college soccer? A lot of players that were, you know, even 8, 9, 10 years ago thought, you know, college soccer, that's a step down. I'm going to stay in England. I'm going to stay, be a professional here. What made you think about coming over?
Yeah, my journey was a little different. I think it all started in getting released from Leeds when in under 16s. I was released from Leeds, and I bounced around a couple of different academies, Rotherham, Sheffield, academies near me. Didn't get in anywhere, and I kind of thought about hanging up the boots, to be honest, and going to uni in England and getting an education and getting a job. But it was my dad. He told me to stay in football, keep playing, because it'll lead to different opportunities. So I was like, okay, I'll keep playing. I joined a team called UFCA that's based in Leeds and kept playing there. And then the American route got brought up to me. I'm not sure how it got brought up to me, but my dad brought it up to me, and we spoke to SIUSA because it allowed me to keep playing football, keep playing the sport I enjoy, but also do the education route. And that's what we ended up going with, and it turned out pretty nicely.
When did you first see Dan play, Chris?
Yeah, when he was at UFCA, obviously I was living in Leeds then, and I knew the guys at UFCA for a number of years. So they were like, "Oh, yeah, we've got another player." And typically, like from that academy, you get players who are obviously decent, but of a certain level. It's different times now, but like they're probably going to, I don't know, junior college, like low end division two as a starting point. And then I actually remember Dan, like he was pretending to be a defensive midfielder, and then he was like, I remember afterwards he was saying like, "Oh, do you think I'm good enough?" And I was like, "Yeah, you're fine." And then I popped over to his house in Harrogate, and then just kind of met him from there, and always kept in touch with his dad, especially. He's your biggest fan, obviously. We catch up when we see each other. So yeah, I've loved like the family. They're such a nice family. I've been working with both throughout the years, and from that, we've signed his cousins, and they've gone on to do different things as well. So yeah, I remember it really well, actually.
I remember that game. What was that, Danny?
I was just saying, I remember the game he came and watched at UFCA, and I remember speaking to him afterwards.
Yeah.
Were you really nervous at one point, Don, that you weren't going to be good enough? Or
Were you
What?
Dan, were you pretending to be like centre? I mean, I always used to say like, you're going to be a centre back, and but you wanted to play more centre midfield, didn't you? Defensive midfield. Is that right? Is that, I'm remembering that right? Or have I convinced myself that one?
Yeah, I was playing the six at the time, and I actually started my first year in college. I was playing six.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, I need to move back though.
But yeah, I bounced around between centre back and six throughout those couple of years, and then finally settled at centre back.
Yeah.
And were you really nervous for a while that you wouldn't be good enough to play here?
I don't know if it was that. I think I was confident that I would be good enough. I think it was just what level of school I would get to, whether it would be D1, a higher level D1. I remember bringing a couple of schools up to Chris about schools that I wanted to go to, and he was saying, "Well, yeah, everyone wants to go to those schools, so let's chill a little bit with the expectations." But I knew I was a good player. I just didn't know how it would translate to the American game, and it took a little bit of adjusting, but we translated quite well.
Yeah, that's
And I,
fair. And you end up at
but
Western Michigan, right?
just
Yeah.
before that, Don, just like I will add to that as well. Like obviously he approached with certain schools, I remember, and I remember a couple of decent ones being reasonably interested, but like anybody from the UK, they don't really understand like the levels, and you just kind of Google names. And the thing that Dan had as well, which is really rare, he had some brains about him. He had academics and his good grades as well, which kind of well, it definitely helped. So I just kind of looked at that. And it's hard to go into Division One as a freshman in general. Anyway, it was how many years ago now? 6, 7 years ago, whatever it was. But like even more so now. But yeah, I kind of thought if he's going to go in Division One, he'll probably go like lower end somewhere that he's going to be able to get some minutes from like sort of year one. And it kind of transcribed. It turned out he did that. But then the team did well, and Dan was part of that. And then obviously became quite a decent team over the years with it.
Yeah, well, what was the hardest part about transitioning over here, Dan?
I mean, you hear it talked about all the time, I think, with English players coming over, and Chris talks about it a lot with new players. But it's true. It's the physicality, the athleticism. I think within the first couple of sessions when I arrived, even just doing rondos, I knew I was one of the better technical players on the team already. So I was pretty confident about my chances to play, and I was like, I'm going to play every minute. And that continued in the preseason, and then you get into the actual season, you get into the testing. And the athleticism of all the American players really shows through. It's a completely different game. It's based a lot on vertical jumps, sprint speed, lifting weights in the gym, and just the ability to cover ground on the pitch is so big. Everyone's so fast and so strong. And I think especially my first year, that was the biggest struggle was just the physical side of things.
Had you known that, would you have done things differently to prepare at home, or do you think there's just no way you can prepare? You just got to jump into it.
No, you definitely can prepare. I mean, the actual physical side of things, like in terms of sprint speed and vertical jumps, if you want to prepare for that, it's got to be a couple of years in advance because things like that take years to get better at. But where I would have changed or done things differently is definitely my physical training in terms of endurance and cardiovascular fitness going into preseason. I remember I had a lad's holiday with my boys in England about 2 weeks before I went for pre-season in college. I ended up getting sick on the holiday, so I couldn't really train for a week afterwards. And then I did about a week of running and show up for pre-season not in shape, and we're doing the fitness in pre-season. Everyone's running laps around me. So I think your preparation a good 5 6 weeks in advance, getting the cardiovascular fitness up and getting your endurance up is huge. And if you want to work on your physicality in the gym and your strength and your speed, you got to start doing that a couple of years in advance if you're already looking into the process.
I think that's such good advice, even for, not just for players coming in internationally, but for American kids. I don't think they understand, if you can crack the top 10 in the team fitness and how you finish as a freshman, the coach is going to say, all right, they at least care, right? I'm going to give them some kind of minutes here, at least in some scrimmages or something, give them an opportunity. And I think a lot of kids hurt themselves by not taking their fitness seriously.
For sure. I mean, the fitness side of things is completely under your control. There's certain physical attributes that you can't control, whether that's strength or speed or whatever. but your physical fitness coming into training, your ability to run is 100% under your control. So it definitely reflects badly on you. If you're not in shape showing up, it shows that you don't really care as much or you haven't put the time in. So it's definitely huge.
Dan, you
You've
just going back a step, just to explain why you got released from Leeds as well.
So I got released from Leeds. I'm sure there was multiple reasons, but the main one they gave, well, the answer they gave me was, we don't see a pathway for you at the club, which is so generic and doesn't really give you an answer. But the main reason was size and physicality. I was a late developer, very late developer. In under 16s, I think I was 5'9", something like that. And their final height was 5'10" for me. Their anticipated final height for me was 5'10" based on some leg measurements and torso measurements or whatever. And obviously I'm 6'2" now and a little bigger than they expected. So yeah, they got it wrong, but it all worked out in the end.
That's wild. And that's for American parents listening to this, they think it's only Americans. It drives me crazy that they think, oh, American soccer, youth soccer, all they care are college soccer and all of it. All they care about is height. All they care about is speed. And it's like, no, it's a big physical sport from played by big physical players. That's everywhere in the world, including in Canada where you're playing now, right?
For sure. For sure. I mean, like if you're going to be a center back, you can't be small. You're going to get bullied by strikers. It's just the realistic tough side of the game, but there's also got to be a balance where not every kid develops at the same rate. And I was, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, depending on how you look at it, I was someone who developed slower. It ended up taking me on this journey to the States where maybe I've got teammates who stayed on and did a scholarship in Leeds and they're not playing anymore. And I went on this journey across the world, played in the States. Now I'm playing in Canada and I'm still playing. So you can look at it as a blessing, but yeah, it's something that's true. And I think coaches and parents need to look at it as you can't be rushed, right? Kids are going to develop at different times and you just got to be patient with it.
I remember Don with Dan. I saw when he came back after his first semester. I think it was anyway. You came and played in a game like one of our like whatever trial games versus Salford youth team. I don't know if you remember that or not. And we played at in Platt Lane in Manchester, where Manchester City's training ground used to be. And you played there, but the difference in like in 4 or 5 months from you going to like being in England to going to college, like there's a massive physical difference even in that shot period of time. I think it was December. It must have been around that time. It's obviously back for Christmas. I'm just kind of guessing that, but I think it was. But there's a massive difference with that. So it just showed you like what the getting in a full time sort of quote unquote full time environment was. And it really helped you. And that's obviously you played minimal minutes sort of first year, which then you obviously worked hard in the gym as well. But for year two and onwards, you were kind of ready. So it was good to see. It was kind of nice to see you step in. Like I say, you won't remember this, but you stepped in and played with guys who were interested in playing in America and all that sort of stuff, and you were just miles ahead of everyone. And it kind of like
Yeah.
everyone were like, "Oh wow, you're pinging the ball around." It's kind of like you got better as well in like 5 months. You could just see
Yeah.
it.
Yeah, it's you're in a competitive, demanding environment where results matter, and a lot of kids going into this experience haven't been in that kind of environment where there's a lot of pressure to perform. So everyone's working hard every day, doing that work in the gym, and it's gonna improve a player a lot.
Yeah, and I think most of the American people listening to this to understand that, because they see coaches getting fired all the time for not winning, that this is a results oriented. I say it's senior level football. I'd often call it like our fourth division, although it's full of first division players like yourself, that could play. You're probably partway through your college career, you could have made the transition into the professional game. Did you ever think about jumping early, or were you certain that you wanted to get your degree first?
Yeah, if I'm going to be completely honest with you, I didn't really think about properly playing professional soccer until after my senior year, where I had a really good year. Obviously, I played a lot my sophomore year. I was all conference, played every minute. My junior year, the team didn't do as well as we were hoping. And I still wasn't thinking really about playing professional soccer. I was thinking about getting my degree, getting a job. And then senior year happened, and I had a really good year. The team had a really good year. We went to the Sweet 16. I was an All-American Conference Player of the Year, and I ended up getting drafted. And then I was like, okay, maybe professional game is a realistic option. And so it's crazy how when you don't force it, it just lands in your lap. But I feel like I was a little different where it wasn't originally in the cards for me, and then all of a sudden it was there, and it was a realistic chance.
Explain what degree you did as well.
I did biomedical
Yeah.
science, and looking back, I probably should have done some business degree that wouldn't have taken as much time, because I'm probably not going to use that biomed degree anymore. But it was a good time. I had a buddy who was in all my classes with me, so we grinded it out. It was a lot of work, but yeah, maybe looking back, it wasn't the smartest decision.
Well, I heard like when you're going through the college career, obviously kept in touch and whatnot, but like when you played at Grand Rapids and well, yeah, were they called Midwest by that point or Grand
No, it
Rapids?
was still Grand Rapids when I was there, the Midwest now.
So you were there and like South Bend Lions and all that, and people like I think it might have been the South Bend Lions when you were there. I think somebody mentioned to me like this, like somebody random was talking about you, and I was like, oh, like that's the first time I've heard like somebody thinking you can actually step up now. Because it worked like you say, like the college career, you got like all conference and stuff. But it came that sort of like after junior year, it almost like just went to a different gear and just like just I don't know what changed. There must have been something that happened between junior and senior year just for you. I know the team did better, but you definitely did something different. I don't know what it was. Any tricks for anyone? Any
Yeah,
secrets?
I couldn't tell you. Maybe it was no, I had my girlfriend before junior year, so I don't know what it would have been. But I don't know. It was probably just confidence. I was given a leadership role. I was made a captain within the team. Maybe that was part of it. Being made a captain, having that confidence and that trust from the coach, and then obviously the team doing a lot better and having that team camaraderie and getting those results helped too.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, having coached, a long time in college and watching players develop, I think it's just maturity. I think it's just that things that bothered players before when they were younger, freshman year, sophomore year, and then something about that junior, senior year getting to the top of the ladder again, right? And you see all the scared little freshmen come in, right? And you see the nervous sophomores. It's like, well, I didn't get to start last year. Am I going to get to start? There's just a lot of nerves going on. By the time you've been a starter for a year or two, and certainly after your junior year, and this, and now you're going in as a leader your senior year. Yeah, I think it's just mentality, right? Just confidence.
I think so. Confidence, having that position of leadership within the team is huge, and it prepares you so well for the professional game as well. You see a lot of young players coming in who haven't gone the college route. They're a lot less mature than the guys who are coming out of college. I think having that position of leadership and having that position of authority within a team, as well as living on your own, doing all the stuff, going to class, showing up on time, it adds a lot of responsibility that prepares you really well for then going into a professional environment and being a part of a professional team. That a lot of young guys on our team who haven't had that experience, they struggle with the professional side of it and the maturity side of things. So it develops you so much, not only in your soccer game, but also in those other areas that help with the professional game.
That's a really astute observation, man. Because I tell you, there are a lot of people online who like to talk, and there it's like, well, you're wasting your time going to college. If you're good enough, just go straight pro. I understand how hard it is. They clearly have never coached or tried to play at that level. They just think that, oh, you're a really good 18-year-old, you're going to jump straight into the pro game. That's not even how the pro academies in Europe work. Very few 18-year-olds starting out, playing at the top professional level. They might have to spend quite a bit of time in the reserves until they're, 20, 21, 22 years old is when a lot of professionals make it. And that's a really good observation, Dan, that college and having to balance living here on your own and going to class and practice and everything all on your own kind of develops your maturity.
For sure. And look, I'm not going to say that college is the best route for everyone. There's young players coming through academies who are at that level already, who are already getting looks with a first team or with an MLS next team. And maybe college isn't the right route for them, and they want to just go straight into the professional game. But I think the majority of players, I think, would benefit from college, just delaying the professional game a little bit and going to college and rounding out yourself as a person and getting that education to fall back on, I think is huge for most players. Not all players, but most players, I think it's huge.
What do you think about our, what did you think about our odd system of only playing for basically 5 months of competitive football and then getting the break and then explain to people how the spring works? And what did you think about it? And then, maybe what were the upsides of the spring being the way that it is laid out, or if there are any?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough, right? When so obviously the fall, for people who don't know, the fall is when the competitive games happen. It's to eight how many games is the season? Like 18, something like that.
Yeah, regular season, right? Then playoffs.
Then you got playoffs. So it's not many games, and it's all in within the space of like 2, 3 months. I think the benefits of it is there's two benefits. It makes the fall super high pressure, go competitive experience. It makes players be able to thrive under pressure because you have such a limited time to perform. And then the other side of things, it gives you the time in the spring to work on other parts of your game, where part of the physicality that we've spoken about, you do a lot of work in the gym and build out parts of you as a player that you don't get to work on in season. I think that's huge. But then again, you do spend like 6, 7 months out of the year not in competition, which is, I think, is maybe something that could be detrimental to progression. So I think there's upsides and downsides to it. Whether that means introducing competitive things in the spring season, I don't know if that would help or what. But there's benefits and drawbacks to that system, I think.
What would you do, Dan, if
Okay.
you had, sorry, Don, if what would you do, Dan, if you had a you're the new commissioner of college soccer? Like, I think it's obvious, like the 10 month season thing, but anything further on that, what would you change or add?
About college soccer, just in general.
Yeah, if you could, like, yeah, if you're just in charge of it. I mean, the US soccer thing, they released a white paper a few weeks back, and they kind of said, here's how we want it to look and whatnot. I don't know if you saw that or not, but yeah, what would you do differently? Knowing what you've been through at Division One level, obviously different divisions and different sort of levels within the divisions, but yeah, what do you think?
It's a lot of pressure on me right now. See, I don't know. I know they want to change things to make it more in line with FIFA regulations. I know I've heard a little bit about that. I'm not all for that, to be honest. I love the countdowns at the end of a game where there's no added time, and once the timer runs out, the timer runs out. Stopping the clock, I think that helps with time wasting. And then the golden goal rule was some of your best memories as a player with a golden goal where you were the ones who scored the golden goal and the game was done. That celebration was incredible.
You're
I
going
know that's
mental.
I know that's gone now, but that was a lot of fun for me. I think the biggest thing I would change is just adding, with even if it's not like a full competitive season in the spring, adding in a few more games. You get more time with the team, and it's somewhat of a season, because I know in the spring there was limited time you could spend with the team, coaches could spend with players. You played like three or four friendly games, and it felt like it was there wasn't enough game time, and there wasn't enough competitive stuff in the spring. So I would find a way to add something more to the spring season to make it a little more competitive and a little more worthwhile.
You know,
Don,
our
what would you add?
87 podcasts ago, Chris, you did the very first podcast that we ever did with Bobby Clark. And I'll never forget something that Bobby said. He said, this is a guy that's won, multiple national championships. He's been at Stanford, Notre Dame, played professionally in Scotland. And he said he loved our spring system because it took the pressure off so that he could work with players that needed developing. And what they needed developing on, and there was no pressure. You could actually spend time with those players and get them better and improve and improved them. And that was the one upside. He says he loved the spring. I think you asked him, Chris, would you go to a 10-month season? And he said no. He said if it was up to him, he would keep it exactly like it is because he liked being able to work with the players and develop it. Man, I think one
Quite
of
like
the
the
things that somebody mentioned one time, and I thought it was a good idea, just hey, if a school wants to schedule 10 games, who cares? Let them schedule, let that school schedule 10 games in the spring. What does it matter? I think limiting it to only, what is it, 5 games you can play, six, maybe six? I don't remember at Division One.
Yeah, I think we don't need to. I don't like the idea of spreading out the whole season across the fall and the spring, because I feel like the intense pressure pot environment of the fall season is something that you can't really emulate in any other level of football. And I think I loved it. I thought it was great. Everyone gets up for it. It's the go time of college soccer. But maybe, yeah, just fleshing out the spring season a little bit, so it's less of just playing a few games here and there and working in the gym. Maybe there's more to work towards within a spring season, but keep the fall season as it is, because I loved how pressurized the whole season was.
That's interesting. Sorry, Chris, you were going to say something?
No, it just I think, I mean, this is another podcast episode talking about all this sort of stuff, but yeah, I split between like a 10-month season and the whole sp I, like Dan just said there, like the intense of fall, like yeah, there is something about that, I think. But then if you kind of like put all the games, if you play in USL2, for example, you do play quite a lot of games throughout like a 10-month sort of year, don't you? But it's all really disjointed. It's really foreign to like international people for that. But I mean, maybe the spring season can become more competitive with maybe interdivisional sort of competition, like not like an open cup, but something, do you know what I mean? Just something a bit more to it. But yeah, there's pros and cons. I mean, they put the white paper forward and said like they want promotion relegation within Division One. I think that's one of the things. Like having different, I don't know how it's going to work, but it seems pretty interesting. But yeah, now I'm just interested to know, because obviously you've been through it, played at like obviously Sweet 16, you've played at the highest level of Division One, seen it. So I was just curious, really. So I wasn't going to throw you under the bus there. You're not actually the commissioner of the college soccer, so don't worry.
Well, I don't get to make the decisions.
No, maybe pass it on to US soccer.
Yeah.
You've got some, your background is a little bit better than some of the backgrounds who are actually deciding that right now. So,
if you look at that committee, there's a lot of marketing guys on there that have no soccer experience. So,
yeah,
all
no,
right.
but no biomed guys.
No
Don't know if that'll
biomed.
help.
So what do you think about Kent? So you got drafted, right? So you got drafted in college. How did that go? How'd that feel? And then what kind of happened and led to where you're at now?
Yeah, the draft process was pretty surreal. I thought I was going to go. I knew I would go in the third round to Chicago if I hadn't gone before, because they'd told me that, but I've not heard anything from Whitecaps. I think I wish I would have known a little bit more about the draft process before I went into it, because it might have changed a bit of decision making about what I did.
Like
I think
what?
so
What do you
I
think you would have done differently now?
Well, now looking back, it's hard to say. I don't think I would have done anything differently, because I'm happy with how things have gone.
But
Um,
theoretically.
but theoretically, so it's important for seniors or juniors or whatever who are in the draft process to know that being drafted doesn't really mean anything. It means,
A trial.
at best, you've got a. In some cases, it means a first team contract, but in most cases, at best, it means you've got a trial with the first team. In my case, it didn't even mean that. It meant I had a trial with the second team, which, looking back, I probably would have stayed in college on a fifth year, and then tried to be in a better situation going into the next draft. But that's not what I did. That's what my buddy Charlie did, Charlie Sharp. And he had a really good year his fifth year and went into Toronto. He was dra so he was drafted the same class as me, but he decided to stay in school. But Toronto still had his draft rights. He had a really good year. He was on the Mac Herman list, and then went in and had a great look with the first team under first team contracts. With me, I was on the All-American, but I wasn't a super high. I didn't have loads of high draft stock, so I went in, and when I got there, they told me they weren't taking me to Spain, which is where the first team was training. I just had to do preseason with the second team. Didn't train once with the first team. They offered me a second team deal, but I was like, I'd rather go somewhere else and try something new if you're not going to look at me with the first team at all. And that's how I went to Halifax. So looking back, I wish I would have known that just because you're drafted, it doesn't mean that you're in with the first team right away. It's important to speak to the club. Where do they see you fitting in? What do they see your progression is at the club? If they're saying, yeah, we're going to bring you straight in with the second team, we're not looking at you with the first team, then maybe you rethink whether you even go out there, or if you stay in school and maybe try and raise your draft stock a little bit in the next season.
Do you remember, just sorry, Don, just to add to that, like, because obviously I was kind of like around that time. If you remember, Dan, do you remember the Whitecaps reached out to me? There's one thing as well, you kind of, I wouldn't say you didn't get right, it's disrespectful, but like having the correct sort of guidance, I guess, from a professional agency, that might have helped a little bit more. I don't know. But do you remember the Whitecaps were super keen on you and they were contacting me about you? I don't know if you remember that. And then, but they were giving the impression that you were going to be with the first team. So like I remember they went to Marbella, right? The
Yeah.
first team. I remember you were stuck, and then you were like, oh, okay, this is not actually how it's turning out to be. It was almost like, damn it. But what so you said before, Chicago told you they were going to draft you. Like when and where did that happen? Just to kind of give people behind the scenes sort of like look at that. Did you go play in the combine, the showcase?
No, I didn't get invited to the showcase. Chicago called me. It was a scout there. He called me, and basically told me he liked me, and they were going to pick me up in the third round. They had a third round pick. I don't think they had a pick until the third round. They must have traded away their picks or something. So they had a pick in the third round. They said they were going to take me if I was still there. But I ended up going, and that was about 2 weeks before the draft. I'd never heard from Whitecaps. And then I just saw my name pop up, Vancouver Whitecaps. They picked me up, and I didn't get a phone call until after the draft. And I got a phone call from the second team manager, which should have been a bit of a red flag for me at the time, saying, why isn't the first team manager calling me? The second team manager's calling me. But he was saying he was excited to get me in, and I think just in the heat of it, the excitement from everything, I just flew out there and ended up not working out the way I wanted it to.
It's just a matter of not asking the right, not knowing what questions to ask ahead of time. Is that what it was?
Yeah, I think if you know of an agent or have a relationship with an agent, they would be good to go to. I had no relationship with any agents. I tried getting some weren't interested in speaking to me. Some their fees were too high or whatever. So I went into Whitecaps without an agent, but just you don't need an agent to do this. They just know what they're doing. But just asking the questions of straight up, where do you see me fitting in immediately? Do you see me fitting in with the first team immediately? Are you going to put me straight with the second team? Just to get an idea of what your situation is going to be when you're going in there before you actually get there is so huge. Because I went in there blind. I didn't know what to expect. And then I show up and it turns out I'm not going on preseason with the first team. So just asking the right questions and getting an idea of where the coach sees you and where you stand within the team before you get there.
I don't think anything would have changed though. Like even if you had the right sort of, if you'd have asked the right sort of questions, because ultimately, when you get drafted, you're almost like, okay, I've got to go to them now, I guess. And you don't really get a choice. You put yourself in the draft for the most part. Obviously, you mentioned Charlie. He obviously turned it down and went back to college. But you one thing as well, but a lot of people don't re might not realize about you. You've got a Canadian passport as well, so it kind of fit really well. Like when you see Whitecaps, you're thinking, "Ah, oh, that's really good because Whitecaps, Vancouver, Canada. I've got my Canadian passport." So it looked pretty good from the start, but I remember it changing pretty quickly, the sort of vibe of it all, because obviously you work with the first team. So, but luckily you had that sort of other opportunities, which you'll probably explain in a minute, where you end up turning it down and going somewhere else.
No, the way everything worked out, them being a Canadian team, me being domestic for them, it felt great at the time. But I think what you have to realize with the draft, especially in soccer, especially when you get later, a lot of these clubs, they're not using the draft to strengthen their first team in the later picks. They're not thinking, oh, we'll get this guy in and we need this position in the first team. He's going to come in right away and play. that they I don't think they I don't think the first team coach had any idea who I was. I don't think he had any idea that the Whitecaps had drafted me, to be honest. I think it was just a scouting team, and maybe they looked at the All-American list and I was the only name that was still there, so they just picked me. So the draft is not super high up on the priority for the scouting of these MLS teams, unless you're a first top 10, top 20 pick. So I think it's important to realize that, but before you enter the process, it's a good way to get an opportunity and get a trial, but you're not coming in with any sort of clout to the MLS teams.
Do you think you've would have been picked if you didn't have a Canadian passport? Because there's a lot of obviously British UK passport players, for example, talking about internationals, that you think, oh, they're good enough to get into that sort of like realm of draft picks, but because they're going to take an international spot, do you think that's yeah because of the Canadian passport that helped, or do you still think you would have got that chance anyway because Chicago said they're interested?
Yeah, it definitely helped. I don't think Whitecaps would have picked me if I didn't have the Canadian passport.
Yeah.
But obviously Chicago was going to pick me and I wouldn't be domestic for them.
Yeah.
The tough part then is it's so difficult to get a first team contract if you're an international player. They'll bring you in, they'll sign you to a second team deal, but actually getting that first team contract is so tough, because these clubs, and I'm in the same issue right now, still being international for American MLS teams. Getting that first team spot is really difficult, because they're so valuable to those MLS clubs.
Did anybody else get drafted from apart from Charlie from your school at the same time? And if so, where did they go?
Yeah, so my year, it was me, Charlie, our goalkeeper Hunter. He went to FC Cincinnati. He signed a second team deal, played second team there a few time, a few year, a couple years, and now he's playing USL One, I think, in Maine. Charlie signed first team, and he's been on loan in USL Championship this past year. And then the year after me, who was still on my team when I got drafted, but they stayed another year in school, Dylan didn't get drafted, but he signed with Charlotte's second team. Ethan Brandt, another goalkeeper, got drafted to LA.
Is
Who
he
else was
playing?
drafted? No, he's done playing now. He's a pilot earning loads of money, so he's not worried
Yeah.
about football.
What I'm probably trying to allude to is like the whole draft thing is if you actually look through the stats of it, like how many people get drafted over, let's say, a 10-year period, how many of them actually make a career out of it? It's pretty difficult. But that's football in general. The odds
Yes.
are against you, aren't they?
Yeah, especially, as I said, especially those lower draft, actually, and even the higher draft picks too. The higher draft picks mean you're going in with more of a reputation. The clubs are going to give you a better look, but it doesn't guarantee anything, and they're still going to judge you for how you perform. So,
It's like the Mac Herman list. Like I looked at that a few months back. Like for the last maybe 10 years, how many of that number one, like the people who've won the Mac Herman, like how many of them have got careers? And I was really surprised how many aren't playing at a high level. So pretty shocked by that. And then even like I was speaking to Elliot Goldthorpe today. If you remember Elliot, yeah, he's obviously he's having a bit of a tough time as well at the minute, and he was a Division One All-American and stuff like that. What I'm trying to say is like college is not a given, and it's not to put people off by any means. It's wherever you play in the world, it's like I said, let's say before, the odds are really slim. But a lot of parents and players think, oh, I'll just turn pro like that. They almost say it like, yeah, my son's gonna play pro after college. Like it's almost like pay to play system. Like. But yeah, it's just I'm just asking for all these little things here and there, just to kind of give an idea if people listen, like what the different scenarios are. Because yours wasn't clean cut, like you say, you was Division One All-American, but then you got drafted pretty late, went to Whitecaps, didn't even like go with the first team on to Marbella on tour. You had stuck with the second team, and then you turned that down. Do you know what I mean? So,
Yeah,
yeah, sorry, Don, for taking over
all
there.
depends on situations, for sure.
So they offer you a contract, you decide not for me. How do you end up in the CPL?
So before the whole draft process, Patrice Geyser, my old coach at Halifax, had reached out to me, saying that he was interested in me. They'd seen that I have a Canadian passport, and then Cavalry FC too. They reached out to me as well. So I'm going, and then the draft happened, so I didn't hear from them, go to Whitecaps, and then Pat reached out to me again, and said, if things don't work out with the second team, I think you'd be a really good fit here at Halifax. So he showed that he was super interested in me. It's more interest than I'd got from Whitecaps the whole time. He'd reached out to me a few times. So I saw that he saw a vision for me within the team. And then the contracts come out. Not that money is a big thing, but it's similar money. Halifax is a little bit more money. The MLS Next team is offering me MLS Next minimum. Kind of just like, yeah, we'll give you a contract, but it doesn't seem like they're super excited about it. So I was like, I feel a lot more wanted at Halifax. I'm playing first team football. The fans there are great. I was like, it feels like a better environment for me. So went to Halifax and didn't look back.
What's the setup like in the Canadian Premier League?
It's an interesting league. It's some teams are better than others. There's only 8 teams within the league. So you're playing each team 4 times, twice home, twice away. You get to know your opposition quite well. The level, I think the best part about the league is the level. People ask me, I say it settles somewhere between USL Championship and USL One MLS Next level. It's higher than USL One, it's higher than MLS Next for sure. I know people who've played both and they say the CPL is much higher. I don't think it's as high as USL Championship in terms of level. I think some teams could compete in USL Championship, but those better teams in USL Championship are better than the teams in the CPL for sure. But I think where it's lacking is just the infrastructure and the, because soccer is a growing sport in Canada. It's not as big as it could be yet. So they just need to get more eyes on the sport, more fans, more money within the teams. I think some teams treat it as a business and they're trying to make money, which in a growing sport, you're not going to make money off a team. It's further down the line is where you see the money being made. So I think, yeah, more investment is needed into it, but hopefully the World Cup coming to North America and Canada can help bring those eyeballs and boost the investments.
It's certainly no curling, that's for sure.
It's not. It's not.
No, but it is new. People don't, I don't know if Americans understand. It's 6 years old now, maybe?
This was the seventh year. Seventh year.
Seventh year, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I
No,
remember when
it's.
they first announced it. In fact, I might have been up in Canada when they were doing the announcing of it at an event, and I thought, oh, this will be good. This will be good for North America.
Yeah, for sure. And there's been players who've moved on and they're having great careers now from the league, which is great to see. Mohamed Farsi is playing. Is he at Columbus Crew? He was at Columbus Crew, I think. And then you got Joel Waterman, who just went to Chicago Fire. He came from the CPL. You got guys like Kwesi Poku, who recently got sold to Belgium and is playing in Belgium. So there's a lot of guys who are making the jump from the CPL, especially with it being a 7-year-old league. If you look at where the MLS was after 7 years, I think the CPL's way ahead of that. So it's growing. You got to give it time, but it's a good league to be a part of, but there's definitely more investment needed into it.
This is year three for you.
This was my 3rd year, yeah. 3rd year in the league. Two with Halifax, and this is my first one with Forge.
And you had some pretty good accolades on you this year, right?
Well, no accolade. Well, we won the league. We won the regular
You
season.
personally.
Me personally, I've got no accolades yet. I'm nominated for a few things, but nothing's guaranteed. So we'll find that out at the end of this week.
Well, how many times have you been player of the month, week, like team of the whatever?
Yeah,
It
I guess
gets
I got
boring.
a
It
few.
got boring with respect. I'm joking, by the way. It's funny. It's funny to see. It's awesome.
I stopped reposting them after a little bit. It felt like I was getting repetitive. But yeah, no, I guess some of the player of the week, team of the week accolades, but the I'm up for defender of the year, player of the year, and players player of the year, but haven't received any word on whether I'm going to win them or not. So no real accolades yet, but fingers crossed.
As the movie stars say in Hollywood, it's an honor just to be nominated. It really is. I mean, you're being mentioned as one of the better players in Canada right now.
Yeah, there's people saying that, for sure. It's exciting and you feel proud to be mentioned like that. I think a massive part of it, and it speaks to what we were talking about before, it's the situation I've been put in, the environment I've been put in. I think Forge is a team that that generates these good players, and you raise your level when you're around better players and in a better organization. And I think that speaks to the schools too. When you're in a certain situation, you're going to raise your game. And I think that's what's happened to me this year. So who knows? I could get a move somewhere and go in a different environment, and it doesn't suit me as well, and things don't go as well. So I'm just trying to enjoy the moment I'm in right now and the environment I'm in right now.
How did
Good.
Don? Sorry. How did
No, it's okay.
yeah? It's a tiny bit of a delay. So it sounds like I'm speaking over you. Apologies. Yeah. How did the move go from like Halifax? Because obviously Halifax, if I remember rightly, the coach there, he was friends or whatever with the SIUE coach, and then were they in your conference? And it's like I always remember it all being connected. Everyone speaking really highly of you, and then he obviously contacted you, got you in there. But then Labrador, is that right? Is where you were born origin, like obviously initially, and that's where the Halifax is, right? So it kind of
So
fits.
Halifax,
It kind of fit perfectly.
Halifax is not in Labrador. Labrador's way up in the middle of
It,
nowhere, pretty much.
same province or whatever they
But
call it.
Halifax is the closest CPL team to where I was born.
Yeah,
It's
yeah.
not close, because
It's close in Canada terms.
where I was born is the middle of nowhere, but it's the closest CPL team to that. It's on the East Coast. So yeah, it was crazy how that full circle thing happened.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It felt like everything felt like almost like perfect for that. And then did 2 years there, obviously did unbelievably well. Obviously your dad, biggest fan. He sending me stuff all the time every time you're mentioned, and like people on podcasts and on like One Soccer or whatever it's called, and yeah, just sharing stuff, and you people speaking really, really, really highly of you, and I was like, wow, he's doing really well. And then how did it come about with the Forge move? Because obviously it must have been difficult leaving Halifax.
Yeah, so my first year with Halifax went really well. Second year, not as much. We can speak about that. But my first year with Halifax went really well. I was up for Defender of the Year. I didn't win it, but I was up for Defender of the Year. The team did well, and I was linked with a few moves. I know Whitecaps came back. They thought, oh, maybe we let someone go. They put in an offer to buy me. Halifax, maybe foolishly, it was within their rights, but they turned it down. They said, give us more money. Whitecaps said, no, we won't give that much money. So the deal fell through. So I stayed at Halifax in my second year at Halifax. Didn't go as well. The team didn't do well. I didn't have a great year. So I now I'm after my second year with Halifax, I'm out of contract, and they offer me to re-sign. I want to move on. But given that the team didn't have a great year, I didn't have a great year, my options were limited. I had a couple of teams interested from USL Championship, but the best environment for me, it felt like, was Forge, which was still in the CPL, but historically a better team than Halifax. So that was the one I ended up going with. But it's just and now I'm in the scenario again of where I'm still under contract. There might be some other teams interested from higher levels, but it's up to Forge whether that goes through. So it's crazy how different situations and different scenarios put you in weird positions, but that's football.
And you got to play in the CONCACAF Champions League thing at the beginning of the season. Was it Mexico you played in
Yeah, we
there?
played against Monterrey, CF Monterrey,
Yeah.
which is where Ramos is now. He's signed just before we played them. He didn't actually play against us, but he was watching in the stands. But that was a pretty cool stadium to play in, and a pretty cool experience.
It's pretty crazy though. Say you're playing at that 3G pitch in Leeds when I first saw you to that in a short space of time. Do you know what I mean? So.
It was wild. And then we play against Whitecaps too, and Thomas Muller's there, so it's
Yeah.
crazy the teams, the players that you play against. And it's crazy. What the craziest thing is how small the gaps in levels are, whether it's the gap from college to the CPL, or college to or CPL to MLS, or MLS to wherever. The gaps are really small, but it's just that consistency and being able to perform at just that higher level, that week in, week out. It's crazy how.
What are the level differences between like UFCA, BTEC, which is almost like just a like a reg you want to call it a regular academy in England, which is kind of like let's call it a club, right? What was the difference between that and college? And you'd have to go into too depth in depth, but like a college to even like college to like top end of Division One, you obviously got better and better, and then obviously the CPL after that. What's the differences you found?
So club to college is the physicality side of things, especially English club to US college. is going to be physicality and athleticism. Then college to higher level college is a bit more athleticism, but mostly a lot more technical ability in those higher level college programs. They're able to mix the athleticism with the technical ability. And then the pro game, I always say in a good D1 school, you're going to have two, three, four, five guys who could play at the pro level. But at the college, at the pro game, every single player on a roster is at that level. So it's just the standard is a lot more consistent. Technical ability is the biggest thing. Once you go out of college, the technical ability of every player is a lot higher. Like in college, I was technically one of the best players on my team. Now I'm still good technically, but everyone on the team is good technically, so I don't stand out as much for that. And then once you get to the program and you start moving up in levels and playing high level teams. I remember when we played Monterey at their place. So it was on the grass pitch. It was perfect. They're in their home stadium. And they just did not miss a pass. There was no mistakes made. Like, we'll play, we'll put some good combinations together. We'll play through a team. But then next time we get the ball, we'll try and put the combination together and maybe a pass will go missing and we'll give the ball away. The good teams, they don't make mistakes. And that's the biggest difference, I think. And then I can't speak to going up to the Premier League level because I've never played against a team that high in level, but I think what you notice as you play those MLS teams and those Mexican teams is just no mistakes are made and everyone is always switched on, giving a good performance 100% of the time.
Because people watch like the Monterey and that even MLS, and people like talk down about MLS and oh, that's a terrible level and it's easy. But like actually being in that, I bet it felt like whoosh, whoosh. Like I've obviously played at certain levels myself, and it's like the certain you hit a point, and you're like, wow, like I can't believe this is a level, and it's not even the top level. Do you know what I mean? So was it like that for you? Did you feel like that when you were playing? Or obviously you're a good player, so you can kind of compete,
Yeah,
but.
I wouldn't, to be honest, I wouldn't say. I think the biggest one that was like was the Mexican team when we played them, because we were at the start of our preseason as well, and they were already in the middle of their season. So they were hitting peak form, and we hadn't even started our season yet. So I think that was the biggest one where I was like, holy crap, like we can't get near the ball right now. They're just passing around us. I think when we played MLS team, I mean, we beat Montreal this year in a two legs. We tied them at home. No, we beat them at home and then tied them away. So that one I was like, I'm good enough for this level. A lot of players on our team are good enough for this level. Then we played the Whitecaps, and Montreal's lower level in the MLS for sure. Whitecaps are like the standard in the MLS this year. They're as good as it gets. And that it was like, okay, this is a really good level. I still didn't feel out of my depth or like I couldn't play at that level. I definitely think I could. And I think I showed that in the game, but just there was definitely a gap in quality between us and the Whitecaps when we played them. At home it wasn't apparent. We tied them 2-2, but away when we played at their place, they were really hitting their stride. It was a few weeks after Muller had signed and they gave us a pretty good beating, but it wasn't anything that made me feel like no one on our team or I couldn't play at that level for sure.
That's good. Good. I like that. Yeah, it's just interesting. Why do you think, like obviously you've been nominated for a lot of like awards over the sort of 3 years, like what, not to blow your own trumpet or anything like that, but like what do you think has made you stand out, as one of the best defenders in the league? It's a top Canadian Premier League is a top division in a massive country. It's an established league. So like what do you think makes you stand out versus the next person?
For me, it's definitely my on the ball stuff is where I stand out. I think I'm good defensively. I don't think I stand out as like a dominating defensive centre back who's going to win every tackle. I think where I separate myself is just being able to find passes that other centre backs can't find. I don't just play simple side to side to my next centre back. I'm looking to break lines with passes, hit the diag in behind, and really break teams down with my passing. And I think that's something that stands out when people watch me for sure.
And your PKs as well.
PKs, I'm Penimic is no more. I had the nickname Penimic in Halifax, and then I scored two at Forge and then missed two. And I was like, you can't be a centre back going 50%, taking PKs and going 50%. So I was like, if someone's going to go 50%, let it be a striker. So I took a step back from the PKs this year, which is probably a good thing.
Any
Can't have
red cards?
no red cards this year, no own goals.
There we go. Better than the second
So
year.
better than second year, exactly.
Onwards and upwards, I like it.
That's a you made a really interesting observation. I was doing film with one of my players yesterday who's a back trying to break into college, and that was the one thing that I mentioned to him. I said, it's like you don't help the team break lines. It's about keeping safe possession, and you can make the 10, 15, 20-yard pass, no problem. But that's not exciting. It's not that doesn't excite any coach at all. And you talked about, breaking lines. Do you think you appear to me, I don't know you very well at all, only what I've followed in your career, but listening to you here, you appear to have a very strong mental makeup. Like you don't feel like you're rattled easily. And I if it do you think that's the case? Because we talk about the four pillars of the game, technical, tactical, physical, and mental, and how important it is to be strong mentally and not be rattled by the game. But I think that a weaker player plays safe. A stronger player is willing to take chances, and if you make a mistake, you make a mistake, but you have to take chances and be willing to make that mistake. What do you think about that?
Yeah, so I feel like I'm pretty someone who's pretty good to speak on this because after last year, so before my season last season, when people speak about confidence and losing confidence, I was like, what is like how can you lose confidence in yourself? Like, you know you're a good player, you have confidence. And then I went on a stretch of games last year where I scored two own goals and got two red cards in the space of 5 games, and my confidence was very
Wow.
Yeah, and my confidence was very low, and to the point where like I would be receiving a ball and I was like nervous every time I was getting a ball. Am I going to make a mistake again? So I know firsthand that confidence can go. So I think, and then this year I've managed to get the confidence back and I'm playing well again. So I think the change of environment helped with that. But I think there's a balance between taking risks and playing safe. Like, you can't just take risks every time. If you're trying to go for the worldie pass every time and you've got a 50% pass completion rate as a centre back, no one wants that, right? Maybe you're hitting those great passes, but if you're giving the ball away half the time when you have it, no one wants that from a centre back. But then also, if you're going side to side, playing between centre back to centre back, and you're playing 5 yard passes every time, you can go get some random club player off the street and he can do your job for you.
Right,
So
right, right.
there's a balance, right? And the same thing defending, like I think that my last year when I made all those mistakes, I would make a mistake and I would think, okay, now, or I'd have a bad game and I'd think next game, okay, I'm gonna have the best game I've ever had in my life and everyone's gonna forget about the last game. I'm gonna make all these goal line clearances and last ditch tackles and I'm gonna make up for it. And then that would lead to me overextending, trying to make a tackle that I shouldn't make, and I get a yellow card, and then trying to make another tackle, and I get a second yellow, and I'm sent off. Or trying to go for this worldie block and clear this cross when maybe I should just leave it, and it goes in my own goal. So there's trying to overcompensate for mistakes or try things that are outside of your comfort zone, and that can just lead to worse and worse things. Sometimes the best thing to do is, okay, I'm just going to connect the next few passes and get my confidence back a little bit, settle back into the game, or I'm just going to force this player backwards. I don't need to win the ball, but I'm just going to force him backwards and I've done my job. And then there's when you're feeling confident, maybe you've connected a few passes and you see the split that's on, you know you can hit it, you go and try and hit it. Or you see the ball's there to be won, you go and try and win the ball. There's finding a balance between overextending yourself and making a mistake, or but playing too safe and not really impressing anyone or not helping your team in any significant way. So it's tough to find a balance there. And I know firsthand that confidence can go, but it's just about settling back into it and trusting in the player you are.
Did you guys have a sports psychologist on staff that you were able to work with, or did you realize you were struggling, and did you like take any steps to build yourself back up mentally? I don't know, visualization, meditation, anything like that?
We had a sports psychologist who I spoke to a couple times. I remember it was after my second red card in as many games. And that was in at the end of that 5-game stretch. And I spoke to him the next day. To be honest, I did one session with him. We spoke a little bit. It was helpful, but we didn't do another session. Maybe we should have done. So I didn't really feel much benefit out of that. I didn't really get the full effect of it, I don't think.
Sure.
I think what really helped me was just getting to the end of the season. Like the next few games, I played within myself and I was okay to the end of the season. I put in some solid performances, and I think just taking that time off, getting into a new environment, getting in around a different group of players, I think just helped me reset. I'm not sure what I would have done if this stretch would have come at the start of the year and I had a full season then to try and get my confidence back. I don't know what I would have done in that situation. I think what helped me was just having a bit of time off, and getting in a new environment under new coaching staff with new teammates, and it gave me like a fresh start.
Yeah, pressure's off a little bit. Fresh start. Yeah, I can see that. Do you think you seem pretty reflective about going through that rough stretch and then going forward? Do you think if something starts to go wrong now, do you feel like you catch yourself sooner so it doesn't spiral into, 5 games?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Like I've made mistakes this year that like I haven't made any major mistakes, but I've made mistakes that maybe would have spiraled into me ending up making a bigger mistake. So I'm trying to make up for that mistake. But I've learned that if maybe you haven't fully settled into the game, because anyone who's played, they know, you know the feeling of when you're fully into a game and you're in the zone and you're playing and you're confident. And then you know the feeling of when you fully haven't settled into a game yet. And you don't fully feel comfortable. And I've learned to take into account where I'm at in the game, whether I've fully settled in or whether I haven't fully settled in. And then I make decisions based on that. Maybe if I'm not fully settled in, I'm not going to go and try and make this worldy pass or try and win this ball when I don't need to. I'm just going to force someone backwards or make the safe play until I've fully settled into the game. So I think I've learned from it in that sense to where it hasn't led to me making any more catastrophic mistakes.
That's good to hear, man. I think that's really good advice. It's a player knowing themselves, right? And knowing from their experience where they're at, and also understanding what they're feeling as they go through it, and acknowledge it, not just shoving it away, but acknowledging it, giving into it, and playing. Play the old it's the old saying, right? One play at a time. The most important play is the next play, you
Yeah,
know.
I think last year I had the feeling of being confident or being like a mentally strong player was just not acknowledging that you could feel nervous or not fully comfortable in a situation. I would just be like, no, I'm fully comfortable. I feel great. But now I recognize within myself, well, when I'm not feeling fully comfortable in a certain situation in a game, and then accounting my decision, taking that into account when I make my decisions on the field. I think that's a big part of it, is recognizing and being honest with yourself how you feel going into a game or during a game, and adjusting how your playing style and how you're playing to match that.
So what's the off season look like now? What's next?
Well, I've got a big off season, not football wise. I'm gonna try and train as much as I can, but I've got a wedding, and all that stuff, so that's going to take up a lot of time. So
Your
I'm just
wedding?
my
Yeah, his
wedding,
wedding.
yeah, my wedding.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm getting married this off season. So yeah, trying to balance going home and seeing family who aren't the wedding's in Chicago where my fiance is from. So balancing going home and seeing family, spending time in Chicago for the wedding. We've got a honeymoon in Hawaii, so a lot of traveling, and wherever I can, I'm going to fit in some training and speak to my agent a little bit and see what the off season holds.
That's very exciting, man. A new start of the life. That's amazing.
How old are you now, Dom?
I'm 25 now.
Jesus, what?
I know. Feeling old.
Ha.
He beat you to the altar, Chris.
I'm not even gonna comment on
Yeah,
that.
Chris doesn't need any sort of green card, so he's got an excuse.
Oh, he does say she can't hear you. She's not. She, she'll
I'll have to
just.
speak to
She's
Megan about
out
that. at work. I don't think she'll be watching this one, so we'll be all right.
Yeah, well, I might just like clip, we might just clip it and send it to her.
It's okay. I'll mention something to her. Don't worry about it.
No,
No,
no.
we've joked about that a lot, so she's aware that it played a factor.
You've been with her a while. It's actually taking you a while to do it. Thinking about it in American terms, you've waited a long time.
Yeah, I think
So,
so.
more fool her for waiting so long for you.
So is she with you in Canada now, or is she in Chicago now?
She's up here. She's got a job up here. She moved up a few months ago, so she's out of work right now.
Yeah. Exciting. That's
Soccer
great.
player meets gymnast, college gymnast. The rest is
Classic
history.
story.
Classic story. British
Classic
accent.
story.
Like,
That's
where's the
fantastic.
to where's the toilet? Oh my God, he's English. There we go.
No, it's when I say water.
Ah,
That's
that's
the
the one.
one. The water, yeah.
Batting
Water.
them away.
Yeah.
I love it.
All right, Dan, man, I really appreciate you coming on with us, and maybe in another year or so you'll be ready to come on and do this in with us again and keep us updated on your career. And man, I really appreciate you coming on.
World Cup 2026.
We'll see. We'll see what happens.
Canadian passport, you know what I mean?
There's a chance. Might be a small one, but there's a
Has it,
chance.
out of interest, has anyone like been sniffing around? Like, did you have, I can't remember if I made this up, but your dad mentioned about like, a scout speaking with you from the, I don't know. Is that,
My last agent reached out to them and they said they'd keep an eye. I think that's just probably their generic response to anyone who reaches out to them about any player. They'll say they'll keep an eye. So I haven't really had any genuine or serious interest from the national team, but
you can't be a secret. It's not like they don't know something about you, right?
yeah, they know who I am
The
for
staffs of
sure.
the games. You see it.
Yeah, there's a they know who I am for sure, but I haven't been invited out to any camps or anything like that just yet.
Well, you're still young, man. You still got a long career in front of you.
It's 25.
25. Yeah, it's not too old. Not too old for a centre back.
No,
Although
you're not even close to being long in the tooth yet.
my body feels old, but
Isn't that something how that works all of a sudden? Like you wake up one day and realize that it feels different.
this is the first year where I've really felt it. I've had to put the extra work in to keep my body going all season. So it's the first year I've fully felt like that.
What do you
You
mean?
really dial in your nutrition? Do you
Yeah.
really focus on that part heavily?
I've always been good in my nutrition. It's more like recovery, mobility, those types of things after a game. Not working out to get super strong, but working out to be injury free is the big part.
Fair enough.
Should get yourself a Whoop band. Have you got one of them?
I've got a Whoop band.
Yeah, they're good for the recovery stuff.
Recovery scores, yeah, they're good.
Just tells me how tired I am for having four kids.
Yeah.
I don't actually work out.
No, mine's bad because it says I've got like 90% recovery and then I still feel like crap. So I'm like, well, what is it then?
You need 100.
And yeah, I know I need to get to 100.
You need to stop doing podcasts during the day and just chill out
Yeah,
a
exactly. Well,
bit.
I've got no, our season's over now, so got no excuse.
And just to plug that, obviously I saw you launched something with a friend of yours. I can't. It's like a
Yeah.
training thing. What's
Oh,
that
tell
about?
us about that.
Yeah, so we started a thing called we called it Ground Zero Soccer. It's like an online. I know you said you were doing film with one of your players, Don. We looked at like players now, especially in North America, and where they really need to improve, especially youth players, where they really could improve their game. And we see a lot of people doing the cone drills, one-on-one training, cone drills, and they'll be better at than any Premier League player at one touch passing around a cone. But then you get them to look at a game and break down tactical and decision making within a game, and they've got no clue. So I think a lot of where the improvement could be made with young players is the IQ and the understanding of the game. And I think film is a big part of doing that. We thought film was a big part of doing that. So we've just been working with a few players on breaking down their film and breaking down certain decision making moments within a game. So that's what we've been doing. And yeah, if anyone's interested in improving their IQ and understanding the tactical side of the game a little bit more, they can check us out on Instagram.
Anything
So
in
where is
person?
that? Where do they go?
So we have an Instagram and we have a website. It's called Ground Zero Soccer. If you just look us up, you'll see it. And we work with about 15 or 16 players now. Just breaking down their film. We do weekly session. Well, there's different packages that they can choose from, but most players do weekly sessions where we break down their film and look at certain professional scenarios and how they could maybe adjust their game based on certain different tactical situations.
Dan,
So
do you do anything in person? Sorry,
groundzerosoccer.com.
Don. Sorry, Don.
Go
I'm just
ahead.
asking, is anything in person or is it all like
It's more
virtual?
online. It's
Yeah.
more virtual. We found that a lot of players already do in-person stuff, whether that's one-on-one training, with certain in-person coaches. We felt like that market was pretty saturated, and a lot of players have access to that. And it's limited on the effect it can have on players' games. It's good to do, but there's a limit to how good you need to be with certain one touch, two touch technical things. And we think a lot of where the big improvements can be made is with the understanding of the game, tactically with younger players in North America.
So that's you and Brennan Creek from
Yeah.
where's he at now?
He's a Colorado
Switchbacks.
Switchbacks, yeah.
Yeah. Like you two know obviously different levels and yeah, it's good to kind of get feedback from people who know what they're talking about, I guess.
Yeah, and I think a lot of players who've done it have, and even when I went into the professional game, I realized there was so much about the sport that I had no idea people actually thought about tactically. And I've learned so much since going into the professional game, and I think a lot of players who do it, they don't realize how much tactically about the game they don't understand right now. And it's pretty eye-opening for them.
It's difficult to have access to professional players at whatever levels. So it's good to like for a youth player working with a professional player, you can fill in the gaps in between youth and
Yeah.
professional and get them ready for things and just
Yeah.
point things out. It does make a difference,
Yeah,
I can
especially
imagine.
players who've been through the process that you're probably going to go through as well. It's huge.
Yeah, well, if you hear of anybody who's good for college, you know where we are.
For sure, for sure.
So Dom.
Well, right on, brother. Well, thank you, man. So I'll have everybody know that they can reach out to you at groundzerosoccer.com or on Instagram at groundzerosoccer.
groundzerosoccer.net.net.
Dot
Dot net.
net.
Yeah.
Dot net. Good. groundzerosoccer.net.
Yeah. Somebody else must have dot com, so
Yeah. Everyone's stolen the dot coms. Yeah.
makes sense.
And then obviously
Makes
Dan's
sense.
on social media as well. Really active on social media. Just search Dan Nimick, you'll find you, I guess.
Yeah, you'll find me at Dan Nivik. I could be more active. I'll work on that.
You've got your blue
All right. Well,
tick.
we'll make sure that in our podcast description that and on our social media platforms, we'll make sure we tag you so people can find you easily.
For sure. Sounds good.
All right. Well, thanks, Chris. You go to bed. What is it? 11 o'clock back there? No, 1. What time is
No,
it?
11:15, still early.
Oh, not bad.
11:15. Perfect. Just in time for bed.
Yeah, I'll go upstairs out of my office, and everyone will be passed out. So, no,
For
it's been good. It's been good to catch up. We've had a really
sure.
good. We've seen each other like a little bit and whatever, chatted a little
Yeah.
bit, but nothing too much. So
Oh, yeah.
good to see everything going well. Proud of you, and obviously, I'm sure your dad will listen to this. So, Paul, how you doing? Hope you're well.
What's going on, Dad?
See if he gets this far. If he gets this far,
Yeah.
fair play to him.
Well, that was fun. I hope you enjoyed that talk with Dan Nimick. He's an amazing young man, certainly mature beyond his years. Man, 25 years old, handling the ups and downs of making it pro but you heard even a player like that at that level talking about how difficult it is as a freshman to come and break in and to do well. And that's where a gap year can come in. So at gapyearsoccer.com, we've created a process for players to be able to go to Europe, to Spain. We've got options in England. We've got an option in Germany for the right player. So players can go and they can experience a 10-month season focusing on their football, on their soccer, really focusing on it, getting better physically, mentally, technically, tactically, maturing, spending a year to take a gap year and then entering college can give your player a big leg up. So go to gapyearsoccer.com. You can see our options there. You can fill out an application, and then one of our staff will be in touch with you. GapYearSoccer.com, your chance to grow, mature, and then enter college soccer and be more successful. Go to GapYearSoccer.com.